'cause I ain't got a brand new combine harvester, and I'll give you the key.
Bad Voltage, Season 2, Episode 63. I'm Show Language. With me are John O'Bacon and a man we were going to describe as a Kubernetes Lothario, and then he looked up what Lothario means, so we're not allowed to now. George Castro.
Every time you invite me to the show, I instantly regret it. How's everyone doing today?
That is a correct way to think. And obviously we don't have our friend and compadre Jeremy Garcia. He is... we had to reschedule the show a little bit due to some travel issues, and Jeremy is currently on the road, but he will be back next time, of course, and we miss him dearly. But George is a taller and better looking replacement.
Oh, I'd like to think so.
Man, Jeremy's going to be upset with the better looking thing.
Yeah, well, wait till he hears the content.
I know.
Really disappointed.
We are going to, because we can predict the future, and we have in no way already recorded this, we're going to get into... a discussion that's going to start out about
tractors
and is going to end in market analysis
and
civil rights.
The nature of the market and social responsibility.
This could be your greatest work. This could be your greatest episode.
And for regular listeners of Bad Voltage and previous podcasts, we're going to get into quite a row about it, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So stay tuned. Shall we get... George, do you want to do the whole and now Bad Voltage thing? Because we don't have, you know, the other one. Do you want to do that?
And now, all ladies right. and gentlemen, welcome to Bad Voltage. Is that what the intro is?
So, increasingly in recent years, there's been this wizard wheeze that companies have come up with where they take a thing that you bought and decide that it should stop working unless you pay them a tithe or join up to their thing or you don't buy a new one or something like that. And
yeah,
we were talking about this, and I've seen it a bunch in technology, and I wanted to talk about tech stuff, but then George said, actually, there's a better example of this. George.
Right.
Yeah, so this has been happening over the course of the last few years where John Deere, they make tractors, combines, farm equipment, and things like that, and they've kind of moved to this model, kind of cynically call it tractors as a service, I guess, where you don't really like...
do they call it that, or do you call it that?
Well, I've seen people call it that, and I think it's totally relevant and accurate description, where you don't Carry really on. Service your own gear anymore, right? You have to take it to a dealership... and they do the repair, and then it costs you a lot of money. So over the past few years, there's been this like growing cottage industry of folks who have like grabbed laptops, violated the terms of service for the John Deere software and whatnot, so that farmers can repair their own equipment. And this got a hold of lawmakers, both federal and state in the U.S., where they've started to kind of talk about this whole right to repair business, and there's bills being presented in multiple states. And now presidential candidates are starting to bring it up. So it's starting to become a hot topic.
Right.
The reason this is tractors are relevant is because this right to repair stuff with electronics also brings in companies like your Apples and your Googles who make, you know, lots of money by locking people into these ecosystems as far as not being able to repair them.
So hang on, to get this straight. So imagine, you know, I go out, I've got a brand new combine harvester, and I give you the key. Okay.
You're such a moron.
Yeah.
Yep. I couldn't let that go. Okay. For the second great time, because we screwed up the previous recording. And I open it up.
Yep.
And it's going to look like the inside of a MacBook Pro. It's just going to be everything's welded on. You can't take, there's no components. You can't take it out. I've got to go to an authorized John Deere dealer. I can't take it to Bob's Tractor Dealers and get it fixed. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, that's my understanding as from what I've read. Yeah.
I mean, and this is a complaint that my dad and people of his generation had about cars, that they used to be able to go under the bonnet and fix their own car, and then it all became magically computer controlled and fuel injected, and now you can't understand it anymore. But And people don't seem to complain about that very much anymore. But right. I don't know whether that's because we just, you know, you make this change, then you hold on until a new generation come up who never realised that they had the right to repair. And so you've essentially bred the desire for it out of the population. And now, whether the hope is that, the hope with John Deere is they're going to go, okay, all the farmers who remember when they used to be able to fix their own tractor will soon be dead. And then we can just flog people. I mean, the thing which amazed me was the cost of the thing, right? If you go and I'm looking at the stuff George put together. If you go and buy a new tractor now, it's $150,000 or $200,000 or whatever. But if you go and buy a tractor from 20 years ago, before the software stuff came in, which stops you repairing it yourself, it's still just as good a tractor because everything they've done in the last 20 or 25 years has been sensors and GPS. It doesn't change the tractor-ness of it. It's not like it was in 1950.
Tractors are probably generally a solved problem, right?
You can't say that. You can't say just because technology's evolved, they're just as good as a tractor, because you may have all of the sensors and stuff in it, but the actual core, you know, mechanical components may be a poorer quality than they used to be.
Well, they are...
Technology evolution doesn't necessarily mean improved quality.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Now, the point is that if, according to one of the articles I was reading about this, if you were in 1990 and you decided to buy a 30-year-old tractor, it would be materially worse at being a tractor than a modern one would have been, right? A 30-year-old tractor in 1990 would have been rubbish. But now, instead of buying a tractor today, you can buy one from 1990 and it's just as good at being a tractor. It probably doesn't automatically feed data back to some GPS thing in your farm, and it doesn't automatically count all the stuff you're doing and things like that. But it's just as good at ploughing fields and what have you. So if you mostly don't care about all the features, I mean, you've got a new car, Jono, right? Relatively new.
Yeah.
Do you use 90% of the stuff that's in it?
I use probably most of it.
Really? Okay.
But the question as well is, I think you're oversimplifying farming, because that's like saying, oh, well, it's basically just a mechanical thing that plows fields.
I am retailing a view that I have read. I know nothing about farming. Well, so all I know is what I've discovered through research on this, right?
And to be honest with you...
And this is actual farm people saying this, and you know less about farming than I do, so
shut up. I was going to
say,
and to be honest with you, and this will be a shock to our listeners, I know very little about farming too, but that doesn't mean we're not going to have an opinion about it. But my point is that if you're a modern farmer and... the functionality in modern tractors is part of your farming process, and the margins in farming are very, very low from what I understand. So therefore, if you have to go back in time to an old tractor, that is going to be a significantly negative impact on you. So I'm just saying that, like, I think it's probably an oversimplification to say they're just as good as they've always been.
Yeah.
Or they're worse than they used to be.
It's like saying, Jonah, go back and drive a 1990 Corolla and you're not going to have a good time. You know?
Right.
It'll still get from A to B, but...
But I have an important question. When you say that you have to go to an authorized repair shop, right? Is it illegal to attempt to repair your tractor, or is it just that you know it will invalidate your warranty and all that kind of stuff? Like what is
it violates
this?
The terms of service, and from the information I've seen, which is now a year old, the article I read kind of brought this back to the forefront, because the auctions and the prices for these old tractors are actually going up. So there's like this whole new economic thing happening with tractors from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. All of a sudden,
is this a hipster thing? Have hipsters invaded farming?
Yeah, I don't, you know, but you know, from watching the video and reading it, it would make a lot of sense, right, for you to just pay a guy who's going to take some Russian firmware crap and put it on your tractor. You know, but I think it is important, because I think when we talk about right to repair and stuff, we think like, you know, when Ak's going to talk about the Sonos thing, right? It's like, oh, okay, I bought a TV and it has this garbage software that I can't disable or whatever, and it wants me to sign up for a subscription. I can always choose not to turn, you know, not to use that or not plug it into my network. But if you're a farmer, you kind of need a tractor.
Yeah.
You know,
and when you say, so are you basically saying that just before we go into the Sonos thing, with the John Deere piece, I go out, I get my combine harvester, I give you the key, you fix it as an authorized dealer, that's fine, and everything's going to work. But if I go to, you know, Bob's tractor, whatever, what happens is you fix it. You can fix it because it's a piece of hardware. But is the software going to stop working?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. The first one is that you can't fix the software in it. A lot of it's driven by software rather than mechanical linkages,
right,
what have you.
Right.
And you can't fix the software.
Right.
Because that's something that you actually can't do. You know, I mean, and we can make relatively easily software that even someone adept can't find their way around. It's not like being able to unbolt a thing and bolt a new thing in, right?
Locking
things out with software is not that hard. I mean, you get this with cars where you can go into the garage and have your car tuned up, and what they do is plug a laptop into it and change the fuel injection ratios or whatever.
I just did that. It's a lot of fun.
And there are always backstreet garages with either stolen copies of the software or knocked off hacked versions. The same as people will unlock mobile phones for you. Using increasingly dodgy things. But the second thing is that if you do that sort of thing, you violate the warranty. And
right.
While, you know, violating the warranty on your television is not that big a deal because who the hell buys the warranty, if you've thrown down $150,000 on a thing, I bloody well want John Deere to come and fix it if it breaks. So it's not like you can go, oh, well, I'll just buy another one then. Right? I mean, this is a serious purchase.
Right, right.
Yeah. So
okay. So what's going on with the Sonos?
Well, this dovetails quite neatly with a couple of things that came across came into my purview when we were talking about this. So Sonos's new Wheeze. Have you heard about recycling mode?
Vaguely. What is it?
So what this is, Sonos say, hey, you can trade in some of your old Sonos equipment for new Sonos equipment, and we'll give you 30% off. And what you do is you put your Sonos device into recycling mode, and then they'll give you 30% off. And what recycling mode does is it gives you a 21-day countdown and bricks the device.
Right.
Right. And a bunch of people have said, this is insane. There's nothing wrong with these devices, right? It came up at first because there was a chap who's working at an electronics recycling place. It was like, we could resell this to someone who thinks they'd be useful. There's nothing actually wrong with them. Sonos have just decided that for you to get 30% off, you have to break a perfectly working piece of electronic equipment. And it's ridiculous.
What do you think the reasoning is behind that?
Right, their argument is, I will quote their argument.
Recycling doesn't fit our business plan. That's what it sounds like to me.
But basically, I bet it's something to do with liability.
No. Their push is, these are really old devices and everyone wants the new stuff.
We don't support that anymore.
So we feel like, I want to actually find the actual thing.
Right.
I can't find it. I had the link and I've just bloody turned it off. Because I'm a moron.
You're having a bad tech day today, Stuart.
I am.
This is not a good day for you.
Disastrous technology day. In that case, while we're discussing that, I will bring up another thing which also floated across my purview, which is about HP Instant Ink. You see this?
No. What is that?
Right. So this
well, I know, is, what, I know what ink is.
Right. Well, a chap called Ryan Sullivan, who said that he was getting charged $4.99 a month by HP for a thing called Instant Ink, showed up on his bank statement. He went, I don't think I know what that is. I'll cancel it. So he cancelled it, and then his printer now puts up a little screen saying, cartridge cannot be used until printer is enrolled in HP Instant Ink.
Now, hang on. This doesn't add up for one particular reason, okay? He didn't know. So he inadvertently gave his printer his credit card details.
Do you know all the services you're signed up for?
No, but I tell you what I do know.
Oh my God, I'm paying a load of money to Atlassian. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I agree with you, but what I do know is if my brand spanking new Hewlett-Packard printer comes through, and as part of the setup process, it says, "Hey, give us your credit card details."
Well, yeah,
I would remember that.
Well, I think I would as well. I do not know exactly what the deal is.
This sounds fishy to me. However, I mean, but putting that to one side.
Yeah,
nonetheless,
regardless of whether this was a carefully orchestrated way of getting this thing in front of the public, it's still a terrible idea.
Yeah.
So it says that you can't use the printer unless you use HP's approved ink.
No. It's cartridge cannot be used until printer is enrolled in HP Instant Ink. So it's a perfectly working printer, but because you've cancelled the monthly subscription,
it gets the service, baby.
It reaches out and stops your printer from working.
Right. So you can't use other type of ink?
Well, you haven't been able to use other type of ink in a bunch of printers for ages because they've all got little chips.
Yeah, you gotta get the little hack chips. And similarly to the tractor, I actually do grab old HP 4000s, like the old network cubes from back in the day. And that's been my printer for 10 years because the ink situation with printers is just not worth the hassle. You know?
Yeah.
You ever go home on holiday and one of your relatives bought an inkjet printer? That's like my worst nightmare. Setting that thing up.
So the Sonos thing, right? These older products lack the processing power and memory to support modern Sonos experiences, which I'm sure they do, right? These are old devices which can't run the modern Sonos experience, which is fine. But on the other hand, maybe I don't care about that, right?
Right.
For other owners, having modern Sonos devices capable of delivering these new experiences is important. For those that choose to trade up to new products, we felt the most responsible action was not to reintroduce them to new customers that may not have the context of them as 10-year-old products and that also may not be able to deliver the Sonos experience they expected. So Sonos's argument is, some bloke decides to buy new Sonos equipment, he should be able to sell his old stuff off because someone might buy the old stuff and go, but this is not a very modern Sonos thing.
Yeah.
That's no good. Sonos must be rubbish. Which doesn't seem to apply to anything else on Earth. Right? If I go and buy vintage Levi's, the Levi people can't come around and go, but they're old style jeans. We don't want you having them anymore. This has come up quite a bit with secondhand books as well.
Yeah.
There's quite a big push by some publishers against the idea of selling a book on. And as far as I can tell, almost all authors think it's a great idea. Right? It gets more people looking at their books. It's a cheap way of buying books for people who can't afford to go and buy new ones all the time.
Libraries.
Right.
It's generally a good... Yeah, exactly. It's exactly
libraries are a thing.
It's exactly the same reason that libraries are a good idea, right?
Yeah.
But there's a small cohort of, I think, publishers who are like, no, we don't want that because we feel like every time someone buys that book, we should see some money from it. It's like, no, you sold it one time. Your interest in it ends at that point. It's now my book and I can do what I want with it. But interestingly, this plays into the same model that, for instance, the Kindle has had. And we've talked about this in the past, where Amazon reaching out and going, we don't feel like you should be able to read that copy of 1984 and remotely deleting it off your Kindle is the same as HP saying, we don't feel like you ought to be able to use that printer anymore and reaching out and remotely stopping your printer from working.
Now, I want to play a bit of devil's advocate here because this topic of devices or software locking you in has not just been a consistent theme on Bad Voltage, but we used to talk about it back in the Look Radio days as well. And I think it's easy. It delivers the dopamine hit for people like us who believe in, you know, openness and technology collaboration and free software and all the rest of it. But I think it's an easy dopamine hit because in many cases, these kinds of instances and these kinds of stories are often misrepresented. So as one tiny example, while you guys were chatting, I was looking up whether you absolutely need to enroll in HP and Instant Ink. You don't. You just, if you don't subscribe into it, you can put other cartridges in like any other printer, right? So I think we need to be mindful of, while this HP Instant Ink is probably like the printer that we've got where you know, we bought it from Amazon, and there's a feature in it where it, you know, when it runs low on toner, it will automatically order the cartridges for you and send them to you. It's a convenience, but you're not required to use it. And you can go on, like, I bought some cheap knockoff cartridges and put it into our printer. I don't buy the official Brother ones.
Sure.
So the question I have is, with many of these situations, is this being overblown? Like the Sonos thing where they brick devices is stupid. But it's only if you enter into that recycling thing, right? If you don't do that, then it'll be perfectly fine to use, right? With the HP Instant Ink thing, if you don't sign up to HP Instant Ink, it's you know, it's totally fine. With a lot of devices that I've seen, like I found a device on Amazon that basically trains your dog, right? It's got like computer vision in it, and it'll spit treats out if they do the right kind of move. It basically tracks how they sit down or lay down or whatever.
Okay. Was it made by and large?
And of course, it comes with, you know, the obligatory monthly service that you subscribe to. But I think you can use it without it. So I just wonder how many of these news stories, it's actually less insidious than we think it is. There's a general trend towards people signing up for monthly programs because that's where revenue comes from.
I get why they do it, right? That regular revenue? Absolutely, right? Like everybody wants someone to sign up for a subscription.
But is it as bad as we think it is? Because I don't know if it is.
I think it depends. I think it depends. Like, for example, when this started happening with TVs, I understood. I was like, you know what? They're spying on me. They're selling my data. They're doing all this stuff. But I'm getting a 65-inch TV for like $600. Man, that used to cost like $5,000. You know, but then I started getting to the point where it's like, well, I'm not comfortable with this. I'm willing to pay. People always say this, right? I'm willing to pay more, maybe to get something that's better, that will last longer, that isn't so throwaway, that doesn't depend on these throwaway cartridges. Maybe I'll get a real coffee machine instead of a Keurig, you know, whatever. But I think this revenue and this data is so lucrative that companies just can't help it at some point, right?
They're like, well, and if they offer it, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like, I have no issue with HP offering HP Instant Ink because a lot of people are like, yeah, that's really handy. You know, when it runs out of ink, it'll automatically send me one. Brilliant. I don't have to think about it, right?
I buy the Kindle the cheaper one.
Right.
Yeah.
I did exactly the same thing, right? Whatever. Like, if there's an ad on the screen when I'm not reading the book, that's totally fine. Don't care.
Yeah.
The issue I have is when people are forced into it. And this kind of goes back to the John Deere discussion, where I remember when I joined XPRIZE and I got my, you know, government-issued MacBook, because I wasn't allowed to use anything other than a MacBook at XPRIZE. They had a very restrictive IT policy then. Right. And I'd gone from like my, you know, I had the big bulky 15-inch ThinkPad where I could replace the RAM and I could replace the hard disk and I could do all that kind of stuff. And I really didn't like the idea of having this machine that's basically just a circuit board with everything that's pre-welded on it. And I have to say, since then, I just don't care. Like, if a device reaches, like back in the early days when we all started in tech, we built our own machines, and that was a significant consideration. And I think these days, generally, laptops are reasonably spec'd enough where, unless you're doing something very computationally intensive, you don't tend to reach the limitations on your laptop for at least 2 or 3 years, and then you basically get rid of it and you get a better one. Or you, if you go 5 years, if you don't need it, like my MacBook that I was on previously, I used for many years, and I just got one recently just because I felt like it was time for a refresh. And sure, it's faster, but the other one is my backup, works perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how much the general consumer cares about this kind of stuff. Like, the issue I have is if you can only go to one place for repairs and going somewhere else will invalidate your warranty. I get that to a degree because, in the same way that Bunny Huang screwing around with Xboxes back in the day would invalidate your warranty there as well.
Sure.
Like, what can we reasonably expect companies to do? They can't provide something under warranty that's been screwed around with by a random person, right?
To me, this feels like, well, to give you an example, you talk about laptops there, right? I just bought a laptop. Well, I say just, it was like 4 months ago or something. And it's a ThinkPad, and I bought it secondhand.
Good choice.
Because I have no intention of buying a brand new laptop because I don't need it. I only turn my laptop on about 5 times a year or whatever. Yeah. It's for talks.
Yeah, you generally work from home, right?
Yeah. But I needed a machine which was newer than the one I had, because the one I had was donated to me by Mr. Bacon and was 12 years old, I think.
And it had a unique feature where it could only work if it was plugged in.
It did
all
that,
the time.
It did. That was unique, that feature. So I wanted a something a bit newer because it was really starting to feel a pinch. I bought a second-hand ThinkPad, and there are an awful lot of companies out there who don't like the idea of a second-hand market. They feel like, no, because we're not getting paid for that. We would rather people bought new stuff. And I understand why they think this, because I would think it too if I was selling things. But the fact that it's more convenient and lucrative for them does not mean they should be allowed to do it. And I can
do what?
I can completely imagine a world, taking following on from the Sonos example, I can completely imagine a world 5 years from now where you can't buy five-year-old laptops anymore, not because they're not good enough to run the latest software, even if you don't care about that, but because they're all put in recycle mode, or because now them being unsupported means that the next time you connect them to the internet, it reaches out and bricks them, or something. And I don't like what I don't like is the precedent, the idea that this is what we used to talk about on Lug Radio, that there's been a shift from you bought a thing and it's yours.
You get to keep both pieces. Now they don't let you get to keep both.
To you bought a
pieces.
Thing and you're... It's software licensing, right?
Yeah. This thing like is... Someone had to design that feature. Yours. So someone sat there and in their software development process had to figure out how they're going to brick their own hardware, right? It's not like before. You know, like, so in Ubuntu, we did this all the time, right? Oh, I'm running this old version. Sorry, we don't support that, right? But, you know, we just don't support it with software. Software companies do this all the time. You get to keep it. You know, hey, if there's a security problem or something, whatever, that's on you, right? Now it's like, well, we're not even going to give, we're just going to make the device not work.
I will freely admit that this is maybe, you know, just me being techie paranoia bloke, and I agree with you. But a thing you said earlier was real people, normal people don't care about this. And I think you're absolutely right. People do not care about this until they've been burned by it. This is like the thing where real normal people didn't care about the fact you could only have your iPod plugged into five devices at once for the first 3 or 4 years after that rule, because they didn't have five devices, and then suddenly they got a fifth computer and it stopped working, and then everyone was really unhappy about it. You couldn't have got people to be unhappy about it 2 years previously, but not because they genuinely thought it was okay, it's because they hadn't been burned.
But the point I'm making is that I get what you're saying, and let's be honest, it sucks when companies do this. What I'm saying is we've been having this conversation for 15 years, and I think, Ak, you said something similar back then, like, you know, this is a bad sign of the future. We still, 15 years after starting this conversation, are not in a position where most companies are bricking devices when they don't have any utility anymore. Even the Sonos thing, I bet you anything there's a different side to that story.
It is a boiling frog. For sure.
But is it, though? I just don't know if it is. I think what it is that it's people reacting to the market and they're trying to find revenue streams. Now, I don't mind, again, using HP as a good example, I don't mind them providing an option for HP Instant Ink if you're allowed to say no, right? That's the critical thing, right? In the same way that if my MacBook, like I broke the screen on my MacBook, right? Literally 3 weeks after getting it, okay?
Good effort.
And I took it in, and AppleCare, they fixed it, and it was all under warranty and everything. It actually didn't end up using the AppleCare. But there's loads of places where I can go get it replaced. I can go to the dude down at the shopping mall, you know, one of those little stands in between the shops, to go and get it done. You can get the two times of broken Pixel screens. I've been able to get those repaired. Mm-hmm. It's not like we can't do this. And I don't think it's unreasonable for a company to say, if you go to a different retailer where they might screw this up, right? Then it's not going to be under warranty. In the same way that if I'm working with a client and I give them a set of strategic recommendations for building a community, I'm not going to say to them, I guarantee this is going to work, because their people are going to implement those recommendations. They might screw it up. So,
I don't think...
What do you do?
I don't think anyone... Well, I don't think anyone except the most hardcore would have a problem with companies saying, you get someone else to fix this thing, we're not going to support it anymore because we don't trust them, right? That's fine. Completely understand that. But they ought not to be able to prevent you from making that choice, which is what you said.
But I don't think... Right, and what I'm saying is, I don't think many companies are doing that.
Well, that's a little different from them designing a button to brick the device to get rid of a used market.
Let's look at examples.
That's an explicit feature someone designed into the product. That's not feel right. free to take it anywhere, and then if it doesn't work in Bluetooth and whatever, then you're on your own.
And
that's a different thing.
I can't think, other than that feature, other than that button in the device, which is not forced. It's not like when a device reaches a certain age, like one of the things we used to worry about back in the day was that when a device is, you've had it for 3 years, then they remotely brick it, right? Because it's become too old, and then everyone's forced to go out and buy it. Even with that Sonos example, you have to click that button to brick the device.
So to pick an example that we've
all... Give me an example of somebody who's done this, of a company... I can't really think of hardly any examples.
So an example of a company who've done this that we've discussed on this show, Nest did it. Do you remember? They reached out and bricked everyone's thermometers.
I vaguely remember this. What was the context? Do you remember?
I don't remember because...
Yeah, I do remember
because
having
you
this
didn't
conversation.
Mention you were going to ask this question while I was still researching.
I'll be honest with you, I didn't even think about this. I put the usual amount of thought into this.
My Nest totally broke too, so now I have no idea what I'm going
to
do.
And as far as I'm aware, they didn't do it to every single Nest device on the market or whatever, but they did that explicit thing. Amazon with the Kindle reached out and took a bunch of books that people had legitimately purchased off their device through a mistake.
I remember that one.
And we've discussed
you know what?
That.
And that was actually 1984. You weren't making a joke.
It was actually 1984. Yeah.
You know what? I get what you're saying there. But let's put this into context, right? That's literally in the hundreds of millions of books that have been sold for the millions of Kindles. That's, I think, one of the only times that's ever happened.
Yeah, sure. You know, this is why I gave you the Nest example. The reason
I think he's more upset that that's possible more than they messed up once or twice, right?
Right.
The Amazon one is such an illustrative example is if they'd done it to literally any other book, I wouldn't have even noticed.
You can't make a movie that's great. You know, you can't make that.
I know. It is like Ray-Ann on your wedding day.
It is like Ray-Ann on your wedding day. He's totally what I mean.
People die from refrigerators falling on them, okay? There's always going to be things that can go wrong.
Yeah.
My point is that the narrative here is, I'm not defending these companies doing this, but the narrative is, this is a sign of things to come. And my point is, this isn't a sign of things to come because we've had 15 years of discussion about this. It just isn't happening as often as we think it is.
It's more of a slow thing, right? Like,
Nest is coming under fire following an announcement that Revolve, a smart home startup it acquired 2 years ago, would permanently shut off its products.
I remember that. Yeah.
And so they had the smart home hub, and Nest just reached out and remotely bricked them all.
They didn't say
we're going to cut off the servers. Or something like that. They'd have said, "Nah, your thing is now going to stop working." And
right.
I think that's the distinction. Problem with if they say you got to pay a subscription to this, and if you don't pay the subscription, you don't get access to the service. It doesn't work or whatever. Fine, no problem. But it all ties back into the idea that, John, it's something you said, that people ought to have the choice.
Right.
You know,
I think it depends on the thing for me also, right? If you play Internet of Shit games, you're gonna win Internet of Shit prizes, right? I have boxes and boxes of just landfill filler from these IoT things that, you know, you do around the house, and then the little company gets bought or gets shut off or doesn't know how to run a server, and they're all garbage, like. You know, and like, I think people see that, right? When they buy an internet connected speaker, same with the Sonos thing or whatever. But like, when it starts to, you know, everyone says software has eaten the world, right? Now it's affecting things like, you know, your tractors and your cars and things like that. I think normal people will kind of start to have pause when it's like, wait a minute, why, you know, have you seen refrigerators lately? I went into a Lowe's. I swear to God, the new Samsungs have a TV panel bigger than most TVs as the fridge door. It's totally badass looking, and it's sweet, and it's like really expensive. And I looked at it and I go, there's no way that software is going to work in 2 or 3 years. There's no way. And so I'm the cynic, and I'm kind of the tech guy I know, right? I think most people will look at that and then say, oh, neat. I get Facebook on my fridge or whatever. But I think as the software and the bad patterns from technology start to get to more people's everyday lives, you know, with things like tractors and cars and stuff, they'll start to kind of...
There's a ratchet thing going on here, right? So, yeah. First of all, companies say, hey, we're going to start adding smart features things because people like them, yeah. And,
yeah.
Okay, fine. So you get Facebook on your fridge, and if maybe in 3 years that software stops working, then okay. But then you start saying, well, we're also going to charge you a subscription fee or something for, I don't know, who the hell makes fridges? Hot Point. Right, Hot Point instant mayonnaise or something, and you're paying the subscription fee to get mayonnaise restocked every time it runs out.
Sure.
And then they start saying, now we're going to stop your fridge working unless you pay for the thing. And at each step, it's hard to go back because you are now, as you say, you're looking for new revenue streams, but you're now dependent on that revenue stream, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard for anyone to say, we're going to go into business making a fridge that doesn't do this. So in the end, the ratchet pulls the whole industry in that direction. It's like how, as far as I can tell, you now cannot buy a non-smart TV.
I tried. It's almost impossible. You kind of have to lie and tell them that you're a company that that owns a... you know, a large building, and I need signage, you know, and then maybe.
And I don't, I mean, my television...
You can't. It's just a monitor. You just buy a computer monitor. That's basically a dumb TV.
Yeah. Which is fine.
It's
apart from the fact that you can't buy a computer
65
monitor, which is the size of a television monitor being really, really expensive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
And so,
by the way...
And to be clear, right, Mr. Oh, it's just monitor, it may be for you when all the TV you watch is streamed over the internet, but quite a few people still watch broadcast television, which monitors do not pick up.
Mm. Nah, that's a good point, Grandad.
okay, Boomer.
So, but I think there's a couple of interleaving issues here, right? There is one... Is the march towards everything being filled with software and apps, is that good or bad, right? The internet of shit, right? Now, I am not denying for a second that there's some brilliant smart devices out there and there's some terrible smart devices out there. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be careful where you get it from. Like, I bought a device recently for our house and it comes with an app, right? And I was like, that app is probably not going to work in three years as well. Like now, but if I go out and buy a phone, less worried about that because it's coming from a proper tech company in some ways. The second question is getting shit repaired, right? And then the third question is the march towards all of this bad and the risk of people having their devices bricked? Your example of Nest is a good one. And from what I can tell, that was an objectively terrible thing. But again, these are a handful in the billions of devices. Mm-hmm. These are a handful of examples, right? It's just... You can't, I don't think you can live in, that's like saying, I'm not going to put my money in a bank account because there's fraud. Like, yes, it happens, but it happens occasionally and it usually happens to other people.
Yeah.
So it's bad and it's terrible. You've got to be mindful of it, but I just don't know what else we can do. Otherwise, what's the option?
Well,
Do we not use these things?
I think being mindful of it is a good thing. Like, I went to go buy a washer the other day, and there were all these smart ones. They were just... It's almost comical now, the way they're trying to find a fit apps and stuff that doesn't really need it. So, in a washer, like a washing machine for your clothes.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, you know, the little metal discs with a hole in. And I'm thinking, how the hell is one of those smart?
Oh, no, no.
Are they not called washers in the
US? Yeah, so I went to my Lowe's, and I was like, I want a top load. I want a design that hasn't changed in, you know, 15 years, and they had one. It was, like, in the back. The guy had to go get it. Took an extra week for it to get here and stuff. And it was just, like, I hate that I have to keep track of this stuff. Like, every time my dad buys a gadget or something, I'm like, oh, now I have to go look it up to see if it's jacking up your home network or whatever.
Well,
you know, it's kind of annoying.
That, I think, is what undermines Jono's example. Because when you say, it's not like not putting your money in a bank because there is fraud... We didn't, as a society, just go, well, you personally better watch out for fraud from now on so you don't get defrauded. There are rules.
They just
but about this stuff, there aren't any. Right? I mean, yes, Nest Nest backed down and gave people their money back because there was basically public outrage about it. But honestly, outrage not that uncommon now, and people have realised that outrage isn't necessarily always working. So this is what also, regulation is for.
Yeah, but you've also got to bear in mind that there are a different set of rules when it applies to this stuff. Like now with banking, I agree with you. There are rules around that, right? And as there should be. But with this, the rules are the market, right?
A bunch of caveat emptor being the rule.
No. Hang on. Like, my point is this, is that, sure, you say, yeah, they only changed when people started yelling at them. That's how capitalism works, right? If you go around bricking people's devices, people are not going to trust you.
I think bricking is the extreme case. I think... Bricking is obviously the extreme case. I think the thing we got to be careful of is like the gray in between the bricking and then, you know, the absolute other end.
Of course. Right? But the point is, like, what's the alternative? Do you have loads and loads of government regulation around IoT devices?
You say this like I'm supposed to go, oh, that would be terrible. Yeah, let's do that.
Why? Oh, yeah, because governments are great at this, aren't they? They're great at technology. Proven to be great at technology.
Particularly well served by the technology industry at the moment.
Are you single-handedly the reason every time I visit a website on the UK, there's like a cookie warning? Is that your fault because of this government regulation?
But this is the point, right?
What's interesting about that is every one of those websites that do that are breaking the law.
God, we're not getting into that.
Yeah. maybe I don't miss you guys.
But the point is that yes, you could have government regulate this stuff. That is going to set technology back way more. It's going to be way more expensive because all of these companies are going to have to spend a ton of money on government regulation and all the rest of it. I'm not saying that regulation doesn't have a purpose, but it should have a purpose. But in terms of buying my IoT egg measurer, I don't need the government to regulate that. I think they should be regulating elements of safety and making sure that it doesn't set on fire. But we already have that kind of stuff, right? Right. But in terms of how do you even regulate your new Samsung fridge not being shit at software? Like, how do you even do that? There's no way to do that. This is the reason why
No one's talking about it not being shit at software. What they're talking about is selling you a device and then stopping it working after a year and a half.
Okay. All right. How do you regulate that?
By saying, if you do that kind of thing, you get sued.
Oh, in all possible scenarios.
I don't think regulators...
So what happens if the Chinese hack a particular chip... Right, and it's gonna leak personal information from all IoT devices from a particular manufacturer onto some dodgy Russian website where it's going to be sold on the black market. Do you not think that's a reasonable reason? And they cannot fix it with the software update. Do you think that's not a reasonable reason to brick those devices?
Hang on, you
for those of you listening to the audio,
me about occasional
I get to see
stuff.
Axe face while he's ingesting that question that you just gave him.
He's almost as
you
red as
totally
what his mic
just
didn't
broke
work
his out. Entire brain is broken right now.
Yeah, okay, fine, do that. Yeah.
I'm not saying they should do that. What I'm saying is that I don't believe you can put into a regulation every and all scenario. That will be able to.
Your argument seems to be that the market will fix this for me by providing solutions that aren't like this, and it conspicuously isn't.
No, what I'm saying is
you cannot buy a non-smart television anymore. Where's the market?
What I'm saying is that if you look at the history of technology, the reason why technology has evolved and the reason why you have certain companies that are succeeding and others aren't is because, to a reasonable extent, and there are, of course, exceptions to this, the market decides what are the companies they're going to trust and that deliver good products, right? A good example is the situation with Nest. That was an absolute shitstorm that impacted Nest, and it impacted their bottom line significantly. Companies, when they realize that, will be like, well, we probably shouldn't do that again, should we? Right?
I don't think companies are doing that at all. I've seen very little evidence that companies are saying, okay, we should stop gathering everyone's personal information because people don't like it, even though people provably don't like it.
No. Yeah, this is a separate thing. This is where I disagree with you. People have no issue giving their personal information over. The market has said, we're fine with that. We'll give Facebook as much as you like. We'll let everything be tracked. We have a device in our pockets that tracks our daily movements and uploads it to a Facebook database. People have no issue with that. The reason why the market is allowing that is because the market has not said that we're against that. The market came out very clearly and said, fuck a bunch of bricking devices. And they reacted to that. The problem is that the regular consumer is quite fine with shit that we don't like.
I don't agree with you. The regular consumer is prepared to make a different choice to us because there is no other option. There is no Facebook butt with data privacy that they can use.
No. There are options. But they don't catch on.
No, there are options.
You can go and use Mastodon or you can use Facebook with data privacy.
No, the point is not the technology. The point is that Facebook has all your friends on it. There is no alternative with all my friends on it that I can use.
No. You're talking about two separate things.
I'm absolutely not.
Hang on a second.
Cloning Facebook technology is not that hard, right?
But the point is you're saying that people being on Facebook is not part of the product, right? The reason why people use Facebook and the reason why they're in it is because it's an easy way for them to share information. It's an easy way for them to consume information, and their social network is on there, right? Now, yes, you can post information and have it consumed on Mastodon, and people, all of your friends aren't on there, and that's why people stay on Facebook. But that's still part of the value proposition for Facebook. What I'm saying is there are alternatives. There are the Purism phones. There are all of these different devices that will provide you with a more secure, more private way of consuming technology.
That's absolutely not the discussion.
They do not catch on.
I agree with you, they don't catch on. I completely agree with you, right?
Why is that then?
Totally. Network.
Why don't they catch on?
Network effect.
It's because the market decides that they don't want that.
Yeah, I think people
don't care. A
small
proportion of the market. They just don't.
Yeah.
The reason why we see the things that we have, like, to me, there is, again, two issues here. There is, why does the market decide what it wants to consume? And then what is the, how do the companies that deliver that thing wield their power, right? So the big issue here is Facebook, for example. Everyone started using it because it was something that people wanted. And then people feel they have wielded that power inappropriately, such as how they use people's personal information. Now, there is many examples of companies doing shit things when they've got power. There are many examples of individuals doing shit things when they've got power. But whether the market wants those things is undeniable. Facebook didn't accidentally succeed.
Yeah.
People, they succeeded because the market wanted what they offered.
People do not like the way they are made to feel online, but they are prepared to choose that feeling of uncertainty over not being involved at all. I agree with you. But that doesn't mean there isn't the possibility of a third alternative where all the nice stuff and they aren't made to feel a bit shit about it.
But you're not summarizing my viewpoint correctly. I don't think most people feel awkward about the way they're made to feel online. I don't think people feel that.
Right, and 90% of people use Facebook. Is that I have actual stats to back me up on this, and you don't.
Okay, go on then. Share your stats.
Okay, let me dig them out. There with
me. Is it always this lively? I only listen past one show. It's actually not.
Now
this
I know
quite
why, nice.
You, why you need Jeremy on the show to kind of balance
out. Well, Jeremy's basically... Jeremy's basically our dad, and we're not allowed to do this when he's...
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know how strong to assert myself, because normally by now I would have just left you two at the bar to continue getting drunk or whatever it is you're doing.
George, you don't leave anyone at the bar.
we would have been kicked out of this bar long ago.
Okay, right. According to KPMG, 82% of people are not comfortable with the sale of their data to third parties in exchange for speed or convenience.
I don't think they'll do anything about it, though. I think people say that, but they won't.
According to the Washington Post, half of all people have avoided doing some basic stuff online because they have concerns about how their data will be used. Now, George's point is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Given that people are uncomfortable about this, but do it anyway, because the alternative is going, I'm not going to touch the internet, and that's patently ridiculous. I agree with you. The point I'm trying to make is there's no the fact that people are made to feel uncomfortable is not an inherent part of the value proposition.
But hang on a second.
It ought to be possible to build something that works like Facebook but doesn't oppress the shit out of people.
But the point...
But no one's doing it because you can't start from nothing.
But your summarization of this, I think, is broken because you're basically saying 85% of people are oppressed and they're just dealing with it. First of all,
I'm not saying that. KPMG are saying.
No. But we all know. I don't deny that 85% of people in that study stated that. Yeah. Right? There are 6 billion mobile devices in the world. There are 5 billion of those are smartphones. There are 3.5 billion people use social media. I don't believe for a fucking moment that 85% of those 3.5 billion people feel oppressed.
Hold on, so we've gone from Stuart,
you've talked way too much. Hold on, I'm gonna get a little germy on you here. So I think people are gonna say that. They're gonna say, you know what? I am uncomfortable with them selling all this stuff and doing all that stuff, but I also love my grandkids and I want to see them on Facebook. Like, what people say and what they're willing to do, right? If people were willing to do what they say, right? How many times have you heard this? I would totally, totally pay for a Windows and Mac alternative. Do people actually pay for that? No. Right. How many, right? Remember when we thought that, you know what? There is going to be a market for a phone that isn't Android and isn't iPhone. You know what? There isn't. People will say that. They'll say, oh, man, if I could have freedom, if I could get all my friends onto Mastodon and all of this, they say all that stuff. But they won't actually do that because they're posting from an Android or an iPhone to begin with.
Right. And the thing is, as well, is every study that you have is skewed.
Yeah.
That's on both sides.
So, you know, I wish I could eat well, but I don't.
So I say I believe this, and you go... I don't think that's the case. I say, I've got stats. You say, show me the stats. I show you the stats and you go, oh, but I don't believe the stats. Fine.
I don't believe the stats.
I get that. That's okay. But as far as I can tell, your argument means just ignore every single published statistic.
No, which, I'm not saying that at all.
I believe the stats. I just believe that people aren't willing to change anything about it.
Yeah, that's essentially my view.
Just lazy.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure. Frankly, I don't believe at all that 85% of 3.5 billion social media users feel oppressed. I just don't believe that. I don't buy it. I believe that a large proportion of people do feel oppressed. And to George's point, they do this anyway. Because, you know, I think in the same way, the comparison I would make here is, I think many people in the world care deeply about climate change and they care deeply about the environment. But then they think, hang on, but you tell me that I can't drive to work anymore. I have to get on a train. You tell me that I have to reduce my energy consumption in my house.
Yeah.
They're just not willing to do that.
And so,
they care about it.
And
but
so, in my opinion, the way you fix that is by, for example, Birmingham, city where I live, has just issued their new transport plan for discussion. And one of the things they're going to do is stop people driving through the city.
Okay. And how do you do that with technology? You're going to say the government regulates what technology people can use?
No, I'm saying there are approaches other than if you just sit back and go, we'll wait for the market to deal with it, the market don't, because being self-regulating is really hard.
But you're comparing apples and oranges.
I'm suggesting that if you want to see a change in people's opinions, one way of making that happen is by having it happen somewhere externally, rather than waiting for that industry or organization or process to regulate itself for a thing which collectively would be a good idea, but individually probably isn't. The way you do it is essentially to impose it, and then after a while, everyone's actually okay.
You're talking about widespread government regulation on the utilization of technology. For somebody who constantly rails against the risk of Big Brother, how is that not Big Brother?
It is Big Brother. But at the moment
it's a fucking terrible idea.
At the moment we've got the same Big Brother, but I can't vote any of them out.
No,
sure
we
can.
Don't have the same
sure
Big Brother.
Can.
What we have
you just don't want to.
We don't have the same Big Brother. What we have is a small proportion of society that cares deeply, more than most, about their personal information and privacy. Quite rightly so, but most of society doesn't give a shit.
You continually saying society don't give a shit when I've just said 82% of them do.
And you're don't argument believe is, the statistic.
Fine, I don't care whether you believe the statistics or not, because your argument seems to be, even though someone's shown me statistics which suggest that this is the case, I'm just going to go, no, that's not the case, and then use that to back up my argument.
No, what I'm saying is the reason why I don't believe the statistic is because the market has not reacted in line with the statistic. If they cared that deeply about it, to George's point, they would have got off Facebook.
I believe they believe that. I just think they just don't care about it as much as tech stuff, right? They're not aware.
85% of that group cares deeply about it. But I don't believe that group maps as an average to the rest of society. And the market is proof of that.
The market is not proof of that because there's no operating market here.
There is an alternative. There are many alternatives.
There are not.
But those people have not taken on the alternatives.
There are only technological alternatives, which is not what people want. There are no social alternatives.
But that's part of the market.
No, it isn't, because you have to get everyone to collectively move at once. And the market doesn't optimize for collective movement.
We're going to have to end
this. Because we
can
just fight about
anything but this?
Forever.
Yeah. I think what we should do, you know what I think we should do? Yeah. Because this is a very interesting conversation. And we're obviously both right. I think what we should do, when you come over, Ack, to California for Bad Voltage Life,
deathmatch.
I think we should continue this discussion with, shall we say, some lager-flavoured beverages.
With some lager, yes.
Live stream it, because him and I have had debates that have gone on for like 6 hours.
Yeah.
And like, it's like, we should probably go get a pizza at some point.
As long as we put you like at the scale bar, at like the hotel bar, and then Jeremy and I could just stand maybe 30 meters away and just enjoy ourselves.
Looking disappointed.
Yeah, check in on you every 20 minutes to see if you're still arguing about the same point, and then come back.
Right.
That being the case, and since we've now done the whole show on this one topic.
We had other possible segments.
Right, but we're not doing any of those. So, given that we should now basically end, and since you've just mentioned scale and me coming to the US, we should say again.
Yes.
I will be at scale. It will be fantastic.
George is coming to scale. Voltage is coming to scale. Internationally renowned live show will be at scale in Pasadena, California, and the date, Jono, is
it's the 8th of March.
Did you all ever figure out your dongle situation with your
personal question?
fixing your AV. Remember that one year where the entire show like almost fell over because of Jono's dongle was broken and he didn't have the right to repair it?
Yeah, that was well, Alan's not here, so I can
blame him.
March the 7th, sorry. Yeah. March the 7th. No, sorry. March the 6th.
Right.
March the 6th is when it's going to be, Friday, March the 6th in Pasadena. We did figure out the dongle situation. We had some almost AV issues last year, but
Are there any talks or speakers that you're interested in seeing? I just feel like we should talk a little bit about scale here.
There's a bunch of, I think, interesting people who are going to be there. Like Paris is there, from Google. Paul Vixie's going to be speaking. Don Foster's going to be there.
Kyle Rankin's talks are always good.
Kyle Rankin is awesome.
I strongly wish he was here for this conversation, because he's very much involved in this kind of.
Now, that would be great.
You know, I've got a good idea. You just remove me, and then you put him in when you all do this at scale, and it would be interesting. Because he's really, really into this like privacy stuff.
And he's hardcore.
Yeah,
which would be interesting.
Yeah, but he's super
hardcore.
He
doesn't just pretend like
exactly
he actually does the thing. Yeah.
Right.
Well, we should see.
But Pasadena scale, it's going to be a great show. For those people who are unfamiliar with Bad Voltage Live, we basically do this on stage. We play games. We have like lots of audience interaction. Mm-hmm. We have like a bit of a social event afterwards. It's always a load
of fun. Are there prizes?
Right.
Do you guys have prizes?
There will be. Okay. We don't have them yet.
I might bring prizes to give out.
I think that'd be amazing.
We're always happy to... if your company is interested in sponsoring us to the tune of giving us things to give away, always happy to hear that.
I don't know if they'd be proud to put their name on this, but maybe give you t-shirts if you don't mention my company.
Some kind of Kubernetes umbrella or something. But anyway, this was, we've rambled on a bit. As usual, I think like we've touched on loads of different angles here, like Axe's point about, you know, there being an alternative, a tangible alternative that's socially accepted with your friends, that's more respectful towards privacy. There's George's point about the tractors and people being able to repair things. Go to community.badvoltage.org. Go and share what you think. We always love to see what our listeners think, who you agree with, who you disagree with, where we're right, where we're wrong. And that's it. I guess we'll be back next time with Jeremy. Thank you, George, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
It is. This has been fabulous. Are you, if people want to know more about what you're up to or whatever, George, where should they go to find that out?
CastroJL yes. at Twitter, or tune into the Kubernetes YouTube channel the third Wednesday of every month for my little YouTube Q&A office hours show that we do every month, which is a lot of fun.
Excellent.
Good stuff. Alrighty.
Okay.
Later, everyone.
Later, all.